Local underwriting is provided by the UCSF Stress and Depression Study, recruiting premenopausal depressed women not taking antidepressant medications for a study of immune responses to stress. SAD at ucsf.edu.
From KQED Public Radio, this is Capital Notes, our weekly look at California politics and public policy. I'm John Myers from KQED. Anthony York, the editor of Capital Weekly, here with me. Anthony, where are we?
We are in the hallway, the Capitol hallway. This is On Location, podcast On Location.
We've gone on the road this time.
Great. This is our idea of a junket. It's moving across the street.
Yeah, this is not a very impressive junket. It's across the street from where we normally are. But we're here in the hallway with, what would you say, half dozen other reporters, something like that?
Yeah, about... half dozen reporters, various spokespeople, and a couple of TV cameras waiting for the Big Five negotiations to adjourn.
Yeah, we're taping this on Thursday afternoon, waiting for the lawmakers to come out of their meeting with Governor Schwarzenegger. We don't terribly expect big revelations from this meeting, do we?
I don't know. I mean, the fact that they're in there, for the longer they stay in there, the more promising it is, and it does seem in recent days like there have been some obstacles that have been overcome, namely the Republicans talking a little bit more openly now about the idea of tax increases as long as they get certain budget reforms and spending cuts.
So. All right, well, let's talk about that one, though, because there was a lot of flurry at the end of the week about this notion that there could be votes for a tax increase in the Republican caucus. And yet it didn't, to me, feel terribly different than what we've heard before, which is that the tax increase vote would only come if they got real budgetary reform, right?
Well, I don't know that publicly, you know, that it was ever made that explicit. I think that there was a public line that was adhered to pretty strongly by Republicans about tax increases. You know, most of these members have signed no tax pledges, and now openly talking about tax increases as long as they're linked to budget reform and real cuts does seem like a change. To me. Does it not to you?
It does. You also sound like you're doing a golf whisper. You're very quiet in here, Anthony.
I can applaud.
No, but I mean, it does. There's a gradual shift. I guess I would just call it gradual.
Yeah, but significant. I mean, this is sort of, you know, diplomacy, right, where language becomes important and the world of symbols and semiotics. Is it semiotics? I don't even know if that's right.
Semi-automatics.
Umberto Eco. Anyway, we can link to Foucault's pendulum when you post the podcast.
It's nice to see that even when we leave the studio, we still aren't any less random.
No, we don't. We pride ourselves on not being nonlinear, right?
Indeed, but the other visual or symbolic thing, as you would have said, thing of the week was the state controller John Chung, who effectively said this week that he would not stop payments for state workers on those days for furlough that the governor wants. Now the whole issue is going to be in court next week, whether or not the governor has the power to furlough state workers for 2 days a month. But the controller effectively said, until we go to court, I'm not going to do it.
Right, and there was concern this morning among Republicans that this would effectively end the budget negotiations today. I think the fact that they're still in there as we speak is a sign that it hasn't. And, you know, the fact that the controller is not willing, the controller said the governor does not have the authority unilaterally to impose these furloughs, that the legislature needs to pass legislation that would force these furloughs upon state workers. The fact that they're still talking might be an indication that a furlough package might be part of a final budget deal if that is indeed what we're approaching here.
And if that would be the case, I mean, it would certainly hold firm with what you and I have talked about in podcasts in the past, where it did seem as though the governor was demanding of Democrats some break with labor unions, some semblance of good faith break with labor unions before he would cross the line and approve a tax increase.
Right, and that would be on the area of cuts. You know, from the governor's perspective and the Republicans' perspective, most of the cuts that have been proposed by Democrats are not cuts at all. That most of them are suspensions of the COLAs, of the cost of living increases. And so by freezing the automatic increases that is scored as a savings and as a cut. You know, I think Republicans want to see some commitment from Democrats to have cuts go deeper, to eliminate certain programs, and we have our first podcast.
We have our first guest. It's Jim Evans, communications director for Senate President Pro Tem Daryl Steinberg.
This is the podcast.
This is the podcast.
I thought you guys were rehearsing, but I thought it couldn't be that because it's so unrehearsed.
Does it sound that refined?
So, Jim.
Yes, sir.
What's the Democratic position now on budget negotiations? Where does the pro tem think we stand? Look, this is an interview.
The the pro tem is just working hard to get the budget done, just trying every day. Just got back from Washington, is going to work through the weekend. I think his view of it is if we just continue working, eventually something will break.
Do you think there's any reason to think that Democrats might agree to any kind of furlough of state workers? That's what we were doing. We were just talking about the furlough issue when you came up, so feel free to jump in.
Well, the furlough...
This is so loose, Jim can't handle it, so go ahead.
Well, he has said more than a few times that he thinks, and I think the legislative Democrats all think, that the governor should sit down collaboratively with the labor unions and discuss how to implement some of the cost savings that he'd like.
So they need to involve the unions then?
Well, yeah, that's traditionally the chief executive sits down with the workforce and negotiates out any kind of pay increases or decreases.
But see, Anthony and I think that the governor wants to see a good faith effort that the Democrats will step aside from the labor unions and make a decision without them. You think that's an inaccurate read? We've never had a critic here in the middle of the podcast, but...
Well, no, I mean, historically, the folks have wanted it both ways, you know. When, for instance, like in some cases, labor unions have come and wanted us to increase pay unilaterally through the legislative process, and we've been criticized when that looked likely. In this case...
In this case...
That was Anthony.
In this case, I think that the same holds true, but it's the opposite way, so... Now people want us to be involved all of a sudden in the collective bargaining process. So, in terms of where we stand on this issue, I think in order to make any lasting change to the state's finances that will result in a positive outcome, I think it would behoove anybody to sit down with the folks who are directly involved because it's their livelihoods.
Anthony, what do you think?
Well, does that mean that furloughs cannot be part of a budget deal that's being hammered out in there, that this decision would be deferred until after the Big Five negotiations and something that should be hammered out directly between the governor and union leaders?
Well, he could sit... I mean, obviously, the governor could sit down at any time with the labor folks and negotiate this out. It could be simultaneously with this process.
I mean, you know, the thought from the... And I think part of the difficulty here, we can do analysis in the presence of... Jim,
don't feel obligated to stay, Jim, but we like having you here. It's nice to have a guest. And then he ran off. Now he's thinking about it.
No, but part of the difficulty is that the controller yesterday forced the issue, and we saw this earlier with the discussion of the vehicle license fee, where this was something that, by all accounts, was, in fact, being discussed behind closed doors, was something that, if was not suggested by Assembly Republican leader Mike Valines, was thought to be a place where Republicans could go, but when the issue was forced and it came out into the public, it complicated negotiations. So whether or not something is viable politically behind closed doors, I think changes a little bit when the spotlight is on it. And that's why you see people like Jim's boss and the other four people who are in that room being extremely tight-lipped now on negotiations.
And those doors are still closed, I should add.
Yes, they are, and we are also very... we're thinking exactly the way Anthony is saying, which is we're trying to be as circumspect about what's going on behind those closed doors as possible.
Democracy in action, right? Representative democracy.
Well, it's sensitive. I mean, I think that, you know, we've seen in the past that in one little story gets out on a budget that, and you know, blows up the whole thing, and that would set us back. And I think at this point, I think Californians really want us to get it done. I think that they don't want the drama of the back and forth between the legislative leaders and the governor. They want us to get it done.
But now you've raised a question that I've just come up with something different than I was going to harass you about and then let you leave, which is that this notion of stories getting out and blowing up part of the negotiations, doesn't that at a certain point say that we're relying too much on private negotiations? I mean, you know, where does the public's role lie anymore in what happens in terms of budget deals?
Well, I think this, you know, most of these concepts and this budget are concepts that have been around for the last couple of years.
The different proposals.
The different proposals have been around for the last couple of years in all sorts of forms, in every committee and in the process. So I actually think a lot of it's been vetted through years of negotiations that have been unfruitful so far.
And yet the sensitivity to all this underscores the fact that there are still things that you can say in private that you can't say in public, even though, you know, those of us who have been following this have a sense of what the outline of a deal might be, what it might look like. There are still things that people feel comfortable talking about behind closed doors that they don't feel comfortable talking about with a microphone in their face.
Like now.
Oh, well, I don't know. My boss has been very clear that he thinks we have to, you know, cut, and he thinks we have to raise revenues, and that economic stimulus is part of this package, and there's a whole bunch of other things. But
like furloughs.
But he's not. But he's talked about that even. He's talked about all sorts of. He's talked about that with the press before. So it's, I don't think he's ever really ducked at anything in terms of the budget. I think he's been very open about it.
It got quiet here in the hallway. It's almost like someone thought somebody was coming out of the meeting. Okay, so Jim, let me ask you a question, then we'll let you. We really will let you go, so we can make fun of you while you're gone. No, which is
I totally understand.
Then I've got
I'd make fun of me.
And by let you go, we mean kick you out.
Right. No. So okay.
Well, this is going so smoothly. I don't know why you would kick me out.
So the one thing we haven't talked about. Oh, and we'll be back. All right. So. This is a good play-by-play. So let's talk about what just happened. So here we are in the hallway. We stop recording.
Right.
The assembly speaker walks out. She tells us what?
Nothing.
Nothing.
But she did stall long enough while for the two Republican leaders.
While we were talking to her, the Republican leaders ran the other way from the press corps. I don't want to say run because that's probably pejorative in some way. And so now what? Now we're waiting to see if one of the rest of them is in there. This is the life of a reporter.
Yeah.
Isn't this fun?
Yeah, it's like a stakeout without the Twinkies.
All right. Let's see what happens here in a moment. Okay, so now we're outside. This is like a travelogue. We're now outside the Capitol, where that little Q&A with Democratic leaders told us nothing.
Right. Although, you know, again, back to the semiotics, it's sort of reading the body language and the nature of the no comment and the nature of them not saying anything. It sounds like they're making progress. I mean, you know, going back to what I was saying earlier, the governor's office was worried that negotiations were going to end today before they began because of the controller's actions yesterday and joining the union lawsuit against the administration. That clearly didn't happen. And Senate President Pro Tem Daryl Steinberg, when he came out of the Big Five meeting today, said, you know, that it's up for the governor to negotiate the details with the unions, but that he essentially that they've agreed on a number where the state has to save through employee compensation, whether that's salary cuts or furloughs.
One way or the other, you got to get it.
Eliminating positions. Those details, I think the Democrats would rather punt and let the governor work them out. Directly with the unions, of course, so that they don't have to make their union friends angry.
Right, as we were talking about earlier. Right.
But that they apparently have an idea of how much savings they want to score. Just to give you an idea, I mean, just one detail, I believe the furloughs were going to save about $1.5 billion over the 18-month period. So, you know, one can surmise that there would be a similar dollar figure involved in some sort of pay cut for state employees.
And I think also, too, you know, it's probably worth noting as the week comes to an end that even if there was an agreement on Monday or on Tuesday or something, you know, which I think is not realistic, but even if there was, I don't think there's any way to stop the state from being short on cash in February. And there's no way really to stop the controller from deferring at least some of the payments that he's supposed to put out because you can't get the cash in the bank fast enough.
Right. But again, you know, this idea that the state's going to run out of money all of a sudden, they won't have money to pay all of their bills.
But there's impact, is my point. There's impact to real people. I mean, if you look at that list of things he can't pay, they are a lot of social services programs, a lot of things that people would. So my simple thing is that there's no way to avoid. No impact at this point, probably. No. It's too late.
And the controller will have a lot of leeway in prioritizing which payments get made and which don't. And so I think, you know, one way or another in the next week, even if we have a budget deal, we're going to be focused again on the state controller and what he decides to do in terms of the state payments until April, when the money really starts pouring into state coffers.
And with that, I think this is the shortest podcast ever.
And most mobile.
Most mobile, and the first one with a guest.
Yeah, I don't know. We can review that.
Yeah, we'll have to review it. He came up. We wanted to get him in the mix. You know.
You know, I understand. I mean, we're exciting. We're interesting people, and I understand. You know, hey, a good press spokesperson sees an open microphone and flocks to it, right?
I think that. Plus, we probably conned him into it. And with that, I think that's it. Anthony's sick, so we're going to let him go. Cold medicine, Kleenex,
fluid up.
For Anthony York from Capital Weekly, I'm John Myers from KQED, the mobile podcast. We'll see you next time.